It is time for North Shore Sports Night. Hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell is back. I'm not sure if he'll be hosting the Salem News sports writers this week, but we have a lot of ground to cover this evening. And let's welcome in Tim. Tim, how are you?
Good evening, Rick.
Life is good?
Yeah, life is here. Good. Yeah.
Well, being vertical is good. I've got to tell you, we met today... let's see. Salem News Sports. Well, let me give him to you. Paul Halloran is with Grant Communications, but he is the stem winder for the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete Award program. He is the chairperson and everything else, really. He had a breakfast this morning for all of us who are trying to select the players of the year, the student athletes of the year, I should say. So Phil Stacey was there. He's the executive sports editor of the Salem News. Nick Kukuru, the sports editor of the Gloucester Times. Kyle Gaudette, the sports editor of the Newburyport Daily News, and I. We met at Red's Kitchen in on Route 1 in Peabody this morning to select not only the player of the month, I keep saying player, the student athletes of the month, male and female, for the month of May, but also, of course, the yearly winner for the school year 21-22. And, Tim, I got to tell you, man, the subjects we broached, I mean, you've been on scholarship committees, and you know how difficult that is to pick among the qualified applicants. This was brutal today, man. This was not easy.
No, it never is, because the number of quality candidates is just overwhelming, and it becomes down to, you know, the hardest part. How do you discern, you know, the best from a list of the best? And that becomes the toughest part.
Well, not only that, but the person, we're not going to mention any names tonight, obviously, but the student athlete who was passed over for the student athlete of the year on one of the genders was like, are you kidding me? In any other year, that person would have been the student athlete of the century. But that person was it just didn't have quite the qualifications of the person who was selected. And, man, that is just your heart goes out. You've been on scholarship committees, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, damn, man, why can't we give co-awards or co-Carlos scholarships?
Yeah, like I said, that's the toughest thing. I mean, how many times can you split a hair
to
find the best person?
Oh, we were going... Yeah, we were going down to the various categories, and it was just even. And it was just, you know, the academic qualifications, outstanding. The athletic achievements, incredible. It was nutso. Oh, man. And the other, I will say this, though. Talking with those guys, it's funny. Kyle's the new kid on the block at the Newburyport Daily News. And Nick is a former student of mine. He is a veteran reporter. But Nick, Kyle, and I... just sort of during the course of, I don't know, an hour and a half, we listened to Phil and Paul just kind of, you know, you do these little sidebars and go off the rails when you're talking sports. And the stuff that they talked about, you know, it's just, I'm taking notes on this. And one thing I didn't know that Mike Lynch had a stroke recently. And he had a stroke. It was, I also read it, I think it was on Boston.com. Mike was going out for a walk, and I guess it was sort of at a kind of an odd time, and he told his wife, I want to go for a walk. And I guess she questioned it, but he went for a walk. They have a usual route. And something told her, she said, according to the article, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, that, you know, I think I'm going to go meet him. I'm going to go check up on him. Well, when she went outside to meet him on this route, she found him collapsed. So apparently, she got some help. They got him to Mass General very, very quickly. And according to the article, he is a candidate for complete and total recovery.
That's great.
He had bleeding on the brain, and I guess it had something to do with high blood pressure, apparently. And, goodness gracious, everybody at that table and others I've talking with Mike Grenier also, it's like, you know, Mike Lynch, and he's kept himself in such great condition, Tim. I mean, he's an athlete, and he works out, he takes care of himself. But he's, it just reminds you what a revered figure he is in the area.
Oh God, yeah. You know, and I had as a senior at Don Savio to play against him as our school and Swampkin were getting ready to go into the Tech Tourney, as it was known at the time. And we scrimmaged against Swampkin, and it was really competitive. But the starting five for Swampkin High School was five guys from the football team.
There you go.
They could have had the physical edge hotter there. But Mike, always a quality person. We all know his history, you know, onto Harvard, you know, and excelled there. And what else can you say about Mike? Went to work at Channel 5 and never left, you know?
Well, the other thing, the Moynihan Student Athlete Program has numerous awards, and one of which is a community award. Another one is, you know, awards for lifetime service and so on. And he was talked about in that vein because he still covers. He doesn't cover. He goes to high school events still. I mean, he's done that. And even when he was at Channel 5, he went to venues that he wasn't necessarily working for or covering that night. He still went there to support the kids. It's a great legacy, it really is, but goodness gracious, I'm hoping it is a total and complete recovery. My goodness.
Yeah, and again, I think anybody who knows him has a good memory of interacting with Mike, you know, in one fashion or another. And I know I've had several doing our work at various events, and very early on, I had an opportunity to interview him. We were covering Swampskin Marblehead, and he was down below, sitting with Fim, and I yelled down, and I said, "You know, will you come up for halftime?" He said, "Sure," and up he came. We had a great halftime conversation, and it certainly, you know, as far as I went, it certainly added to what I did that particular day, because, you know, of his link to the Marblehead Salem Thanksgiving Day rivalry.
You know, and in that same vein, it just stream of consciousness here, I think of Danny V. And, boy, he's up there as well. I mean, he goes to every event. He knows so many kids, so many coaches. And the thing I like about both of those guys, Tim, is they are always, always so positive. And if they have to report on something negative, it's done respectfully.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, it's been the hallmark of what we've tried to do, and it's always been your particular focus that, you know, we do, when we cover sports, we do it in the most positive fashion, and we don't look for the negative, we look for the positive, we do all we can to not necessarily build up, but certainly acknowledge the positive aspects of what kids contribute to society.
The other thing I want to mention, Tim, before we talk to Joe Maher, the Hamilton Wenham girls tennis coach, is that there was a feat for FETE for Bob DeFelice, who has retired now finally as Bentley's baseball coach. And I didn't know this. Paul Halloran was saying that, I guess a year or so ago, Bentley approached him. He was both the athletic director and the baseball coach for, what, 50 years or so? And
yeah.
And they sort of asked him, I guess they were kind of wanting to help him slow down. And they gave him a choice of either baseball or athletic director. And I think they thought, according to Paul, that the administrators thought that, okay, Bob will take it easy and he'll become the athletics, just hold on to the athletic director's hat. And in fact, that's not what he did. He kept the baseball player, the baseball coach thing. But everybody who knows the name DeFelice, with Frank DeFelice, Bob DeFelice, you're talking about records, Tim. In today's world of high school athletics, it's rare that coaches stay around, I don't know what, 5 years, 10 years? but 20 years, and of course this wasn't in high school, but we knew him first, at Winthrop High School football, and he was also coaching baseball at Bentley at the same time. An incredible figure, age 80. He looks like he's 30 years younger than that, and just an incredible, incredible legacy.
Yeah, well, I played baseball at Sam State 72, 73, 74, and he was the head coach then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just remarkable. And, they also mentioned, you were there, I think, at banquet when, it was Frank Carey, Frank DeFelice, and Roger Day all sitting at the same table. And you're talking over 1,500 wins among them.
Yeah. Crazy.
All right, let's take our first break, and we'll come back with the Hamilton Wenham girls tennis coach, who has something to say about a remarkable, remarkable performance this year by the Generals tennis squad. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer, of course, Bill Proposky. And we welcome in once again Joe Maher, the Hamilton Wenham girls tennis coach. And Joe, let's just start with congratulations. What's it feel like today? And then we'll get to some details.
It was, you know, today, you know, we played Triton, who's a bit of a young team and inexperienced. So, you know, we had a nice win against them. But I think right now we're just kind of looking forward, and you know, I think after some of the tough matches we had last week, you know, we really felt good about those wins, and maybe we kind of celebrated those a little more than today. But the girls were pumped today to finish 18-0, first time in school history that the girls team has been undefeated. So we did a little celebrating, went to White Farms after in Ipswich, got an ice cream, and now we're getting ready for the state tournament.
Well, you know, you can't disrespect an opponent no matter what their record or how young they're in going in, and you have to play as hard as you can. So the fact that you finished 18-0 overall, 13-0 in the Cape Ann League, I mean, it's just remarkable. I want to start, if I could, and then I'll ask Tim to join us here. I want to ask you about number one singles, because you've talked about Sky before. But also the record. I wonder if you could just mention some of the individual records, because you guys not only didn't lose many, if any, sets, but you also didn't lose many games.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. So Sky this year, playing first singles, she was 16-2. Her only losses came, Newburyport, Caroline Shelston is widely regarded as one of the best players in the state. So had a loss to her, and then she played a girl from Ipswich twice, and they split against each other. So they've had some good competition. Her name is, I always struggle pronouncing it, so I'm worried that I'll say it wrong. But let me just look it up here real quickly. If I can find it.
Yeah, we love to give credit to where we can.
Yeah.
Even if we mispronounce names, yeah.
Yeah, Anastasia Kozak.
Oh, okay, yep, mm-hmm.
Yeah, real nice player from Ipswich, and you know, her and Sky have, you know, had some good battles over the past 2 years. So Sky got her the first time, and Anastasia got her the second time. But you know, Sky is the rock on our team. You know, she sets the table for everyone else, and you know, number two being Naomi Provost, who as a freshman, you know, had a season like no other. She went 18-0 at number two singles.
Oh.
Played some really good competition. She only dropped one set the entire year, and she's going to be a key piece for us going into the state tournament, and she's someone that I think throughout the season has improved the most. I've just seen her the past month. She's just been playing incredible tennis. You know, she was good at the beginning of the year, but I think she's really reached a new level now, and I think she's capable of beating, you know, any number two that we've come up against, and that's going to be a huge piece for us.
Tim?
Coach, congratulations on, you know, just an absolutely great season.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
One of the biggest things in high school sports and basically at any level is keeping the kids focused. It's a relatively short season, and for a lot of the kids, especially spring sports, it's heading to the end of the year. You've got proms, you've got advanced placement examinations, you've got kids getting accepted to college. What's your strategy for help keeping the team focused during these really compressed and busy times?
Yeah, it's something as a teacher, you know, we talk about a lot. You know, the other coaches that I work with, we always say what a struggle the spring season can be, especially if you have, you know, a lot of seniors. But, you know, I have a special group of kids this year. I have 13 seniors and then 21 kids on the team. And, you know, these girls, you know, have been really focused and, you know, this is something that they want. You know, they're driven by it. So I have to give them most of the credit. This is something that they come in every day and they want to do. They love being with each other. And I think that's an important part of it because they look forward to coming to practice every day, you know, because they love being with each other. And, you know, I think that's going to be an important step further because, you know, the seniors are out of school right now. You know, they're taking exams this week and then they go into senior week next week. So, you know, when we get into the tournament, most of them will be graduated. So, I think it's just, you know, one of the big reasons to win every match going forward is it's just another day that they can spend together. And I think that means a lot. So I'm not going to take a lot of credit for what they do. I have great captains. I have great leadership, but I think most of all, they just enjoy being with each other that's what's really truly made it a fantastic season. Even if we're 500 this year or under, these kids have just been so much fun to be with, and it would have been a success no matter what.
You know, Joe, I'm sorry, Tim, go ahead.
Joe, I'm just looking at an article by Nick Giannino earlier this year. You've got 14 seniors on the roster, which means there's going to be a lot of changeover for next year. But your number one and two singles are presently a sophomore and a freshman. That really sets the stage for the next couple of years for you.
It does. It does. You know, we have that great balance of senior leadership and some tremendous young talent as a freshman and sophomore at one and two. You know, so we're going to be, you know, we should remain competitive in the next few years. But, you know, we're not thinking about that right now. We've got what's in front of us first.
You know, Tim and I are both former teachers, Joe, and one of the things I always, one of my philosophies, I guess, was what you just said. With kids, if a kid excelled, I could never take credit for it no matter what. And sometimes you get praise, and, you know, it's nice to hear the praise, but you also recognize when a kid has it or has the talent or has the self-discipline. And when a kid didn't do well, when a kid failed, I always put it on myself, like, why the hell didn't I get through to this kid? That said, with so many kids on the team, and you've got the spectacular number one and number two, what are practices like? Because practice, I know, in so many sports is so important to keeping not only the kids focused, but also, you know, everything in tune and going over strategies and the weather conditions and stuff like that. How do you form your practices with so many kids?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we have, you know, one of the things we're up against, we really don't have a home court right now. The past few years, we've been playing all over the place. You know, last year we were lucky to play a court in college. This year we've been playing at the Manchester Athletic Club. But our home courts, which were Pingree Park, for years are in disrepair. So, you know, we've been, you know, struggling because we shared the time with the boys to find court time. So, you know, for the most part, we only have three courts and we have 21 girls. And, you know, it's one coach. So, it's been a challenge for me this year. And we've done some rotating of people in practice. So it, maybe it's not 21 kids just because it doesn't become as efficient. But early in the season, I think is really where we did our best, you know, getting ready for the season. Those first few weeks where we don't, you know, have any matches. We were able to, you know, spend some nights at the Manchester Athletic Club. They have a brand new bubble. So we had all four courts late at night, and the girls would, you know, plug in the music, and we'd be rocking the place, and just having a lot of fun and having great practices. You know, and that's really been, you know, a key to this group is having fun and you know, working hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think practices, you know, I think as a coach, you know, tennis is kind of a unique animal, because you're not going to be changing a lot of what kids, you know, your top players are doing in season. That's a hard thing to do. You know, I work a lot with the doubles players with strategies and, you know, working on some of their techniques. But, you know, the work that girls like Sky and Naomi have done have come well before the season started. You know, they've put in, you know, hundreds, thousands of hours hitting tennis balls. You know, so my job is to, you know, sometimes it's more the psychological, you know, just get it, making sure that they're prepared and they're feeling confident and, you know, and let them worry about the physical and, you know, the stroke stuff that they're so great at.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Ed, you wind down the season, coach. How do you prepare for what's coming up next?
How do we prepare? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So we're going to try to get a scrimmage, you know, to try to get some more meaningful matches. You know, and I think one of our strengths about, you know, talking about practice again, is just the depth of our team. You know, we can play each other on our team and really, you know, face some good competition amongst ourselves, which is key. You know, this year having Naomi on the team, you know, now Sky has someone that she can whack the ball against, and that's good for everyone, including me, because my arm was sore at the end of last year trying to hit with her. you know, it's a great thing to have, you know, a lot of talent where the kids can really work with each other. But, you know, I think this week, you know, we're probably, you know, there's a lot going on with the seniors this week. They have prom. We're going to have a fun mixed doubles practice with the boys team this week, which should be a lot of fun. So, you know, we're staying focused. We're working hard, but we're, you know, keeping it light. We don't want to, you know, overwork ourselves and, you know, get an injury this late in the season. So just trying to stay mentally focused, stay loose. And, you know, early next week, we hope to have a scrimmage and get some good competition in.
I've got a couple of questions. So go ahead, Tim. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tim.
How do the boys react when the girls beat them?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, and when it won't happen, we're going to mix it up. So we're going to play mixed doubles so that
okay.
No one's feelings get hurt, but it's pretty funny. There's some you know, boyfriend girlfriends on between the boys and girls tennis team, and we're trying to, you know, figure out who's going to be playing who. You know, who wants to beat who, and it's been a funny conversation on the bus.
Today's power rankings came out, and of course Hamilton went number one in Division Four, 18. Well, it says 17, but now you're 18-0. There are a couple of schools that you're familiar with, I'm sure. Linfield High School is at number four, record 10-3. Manchester Essex, always up there, a record of 9-6 at number, where are they? Number five. And then you go down to number 12 is Ipswich, and number 14 is Rockport. So the area is well represented in terms of girls tennis in Division Four.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. I think it's great that I think the MIA sees the Cape Ann League as such a good tennis league, and I think that's why you see some of our, you know, teams that may not have winning records in the Cal, you know, still getting the respect in the power rankings. You know, so like a team like Ipswich, earlier in the year, they you know, their record doesn't show it, but they gave us a real tough match. We only came out with a 3-2 victory the second time around. So, you know, we have some familiar opponents, which, you know, is helpful, but at the same time, it's scary. It's hard to beat a team, you know, three times in a season. It's something that I think we're proud of as a league, that we're producing, you know, teams at the state level that are competing well. And we've kind of seen that this year with the power rankings, you know, kind of across the sports. Cape Town League has represented well. You know, we saw, you know, Hamilton Wenham win a girls soccer title. We saw, was it Amesbury that won a girls basketball title? So it's been nice. I think, the league is getting some great representation.
Before I let Tim have the final say here, Coach, I have to ask you to mention a couple of seniors that you're proud of, because, you know, the young kids, the stars, get the credit, but I'm sure there's some hardworking kids that you could mention and give some credit to them.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I mean, we, you know, across the roster, so, you know, my third singles this year has been a bit of a rotation. I've had junior Chloe Gern, who's done an outstanding job, and junior Lainey Wilkins has stepped in. I have a sophomore in Sienna Gregory that stepped in and played, and a senior captain, Matilde Gordon, who's also played. And, you know, they've all done a great job at third singles. You know, Chloe's probably going to be the leader at third singles when we head into the state tournament, but, you know, all those girls could get a nod at any point. My first doubles team this year, we've kind of rotated our doubles. You know, we've had some weird situations. There's still COVID out there. There's, you know, times where we've had kids out. We had a school trip overseas to Peru. We've had AP tests. But for the most part, it's been Nora Gamber and Bryn McKechnie, who have just been dominant at first doubles this year. They haven't lost a match. They're undefeated. They've only dropped one set all year. I wish we had the individual tournament this year at the state level, because I really think they could have shown up as one of the top doubles teams, in the state. And then, my second doubles, it's been a little bit of a rotation, but it's, Lisette Leonard, Libby Collins, and Lily Cassidy. Those three, have played the majority of the time at second doubles. They've only had one loss through the year, and, just played tremendous. You know, I think our depth is what makes this team so good. You know, it sometimes there's, you know, a team that has three really good singles players, but they have weak doubles, or they have two good singles players and one good doubles team. Like, we are solid through and through. And that's what makes us so hard to beat is, yeah, you might have a better one than us on a given day, but, you know, do you have the depth to beat us at, you know, second and third singles and sweep our doubles? Typically not. You know, we're deep in those positions. And then, you know, I have other seniors too that, you know, step up on any given day. Hannah Pascarello has been awesome all year. Allison Campbell stepped up and she just has improved so much as a player. And then today we had, you know, Marley Shea and Maren G. Simone play. Claire Nissel, who was the soccer star for HW, has stepped in and gotten some play, and as has Sadie Conn and Brianna Vesey. So, really just a great group of kids that, you know, day in, day out, just work so hard. And, you know, they put in the work and to get us to this point. And I'm just the one lucky enough to coach them.
Rick, I don't have anything else. I just want to again reiterate my congratulations to the coach and to the kids, and wish you the best luck as you head into the postseason.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I think I'm hoping we still have a good month of tennis, you know, together with us. And, you know, one name I'm just looking at my roster that is also, she's one person that has stepped in all season two, is Abby Simon. She hasn't been in the lineup as much just because of, you know, some sickness and some travel things, but she's an awesome athlete and someone we're going to depend on in the state tournament as well. But thank you. It's been... again, it's been a fun season. All I can say, it's been fun. You know, the winning has been great, and it's historic for the kids, and it's something for them to be proud of. It's our first league title in 20 years, which is just amazing. But most of all, I can't say enough. I mean, when I switched over from the boys a few years ago, I didn't know what I was getting into coaching the girls. And I remember after the first week coming home and saying to my wife, I was like, this is really fun. Like, this has re-energized me as a coach. Like, it's different, and I have some, you know, things that I have to figure out, but this is really a fun group of kids. And, you know, it makes it everything, you know, everything that, you know, the season that you put into it worth it, because, you know, they are just such a great group of kids and make every afternoon a fun one.
Well, Joe, what Tim said, I want to back that up and say the same thing. Also, please keep these reports coming in. It's fun to follow you guys and post your reports on our site because it has absolutely been spectacular, and congratulations.
Yes, and thank you. People have loved your coverage, and they tune in, and they've enjoyed these interviews. So I appreciate the coverage, and thanks for keeping us in your thoughts.
And keep having fun, man. That's what it's all about.
Thank you so much. We will, no doubt.
All right, Coach, good luck. Talk to you later.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That is, okay, man. That is, Hamilton Wenham golf coach Joe Maher. How about that, Tim? I mean, that's amazing. 18-0, and they've lost only a handful of sets all year.
I know. It reminds me of, my experience. Not.
and
like you said, you know, it's such a tribute to the kids and the hard work that they put in. And obviously there's a lot of, egos that have put themselves aside when you're number one and two are a freshman and a sophomore, and you've got 14 seniors on the team, and they're exceeding the top two spots in the singles to those youngsters and giving them all the support they need for the team to be successful. That's a coach who's doing his job and doing it well.
Absolutely. I second that. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Gary Larrabee in just a second. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now. Gary Larrabee has joined us once again, sports historian, golf writer, sports journalist. And Gary, I don't know what you can say about yesterday's, that was crazy, that tournament.
It was crazy. It was fantastic for Justin Thomas. It was tragic, and I use that term loosely, for Mr. Pereira from Chile, who should have been the first gentleman from Chile, and I think the third South American to win a major, but he pooped the bed pretty badly on the 72nd and final hole. He hits his tee shot in a drink. He makes double bogey, misses the playoff by one shot, and Justin Thomas wins his second PGA championship, beating Will Zalatoris in a playoff. But Mr. Thomas earned this one. He was seven shots behind starting the day. And, boys, I think he made four birdies on the back nine, and he shot 67, 3-under, and truly earned this major championship. Wouldn't you agree, Timothy?
I certainly would. Look at that score. Minus five, not minus 250. I love it, which meant the course played tough. It challenged the golfers. And, you know, that's what I like to see. This drama, you know, as in the last, the week before, but this was just drama from beginning to end with your boy Rory going out early and then finding the poop in his pants again to fall off of the leaderboard. And then my boy Tiger pooping the bed and deciding, 79s are not the way he wants to play and saying, I'm done for the week. So there were a lot of interesting headlines throughout the entire weekend, Gary.
And that's what a major is supposed to be, as you know. So many storylines, but of course, Justin Thomas is the number one storyline, and we're not surprised he won his second major. He's been in contention for a lot of majors since he won that PGA Championship, I believe, back in 2017. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. And here he is with two majors, two PGA Championships. Mr. Zalatoris will win his share of majors, and he may very well win next month at Brookline. I wouldn't be surprised. But look at also, Tim, all the big names who did not really figure into this tournament. Thomas is a relatively big name. McIlroy was the biggest of all the big names, and he didn't have it at the end. after shooting 5 under 65 the first day. And look at all those big names that didn't really contend. Morikawa, Spieth really didn't contend. Dustin Johnson missed the cut. He must still be suffering hangover from his wedding. but look at all the big names. Look at all the big names who didn't even make the cut. So,
Gary,
it's a wonderful world of golf, Tim. It's the wonderful world of golf when you never know what's going to happen from one week to the next, especially in the majors.
Yeah, you know, Gary, you brought up that point right then. I was just scrolling through on the PGA website, the board, and I was going down, and I'm going, yo, here's another week of who's who on the board, and you're going to get Rory at place, but then you're going to get down to tie for 13th, Justin Rose, and then you got Shoffley at 13th, and then it's like another batch of who's who all the way down. You're going like, oh my God, you know, you're right. It's like, are all these new guys going to find a way to rise to the top to win some of the, you know, the more named tournaments, establish themselves, get some continuity? They seem to be good at scoring and finishing the tournament, making the cuts, but they don't seem to be pushing the top 10, you know?
There's no way of knowing, as we've said over and over again, there's no way of knowing from one week to the next on the PGA Tour, especially from one major to the next major.
Gary,
should also mention that Masters champion Scottie Scheffler didn't, was not a factor all week either. And now we can just wait and bide our time for 3 weeks from now and see what happens at the Country Club in Brookline for the 122nd U.S. Open. Before we move on, we need to talk about Tiger.
Hold on, Gary. Let me ask you before you do that, if I could.
Please.
How rare is it that in a major somebody comes from 7 strokes behind in the final round? To me, that seems like insurmountable.
It hasn't happened, I don't think, too often in recent years. But if anyone could do it, Justin Thomas could do it because he had a very good thing going for him. In fact, the fact that most of the players were backing up throughout the day, but he was not backing up. He was having one of his great rounds in probably his career.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, to shoot 3 under 67, to make 4 birdies on the last 9. And no one is surprised that Justin Thomas has won his second major. But I think, Rick, the most profound situation from the weekend, of course, was about Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm calling him Arrogant Tiger these days. I don't think too much of his mental approach to these things. The fact that he played in one major in April, the Masters, did not play another tournament until he got to the PGA in May. I'm not even sure now if he'll play at Brookline in June, but I think it's an extraordinary amount of arrogance on his part that he wouldn't even have used one tune-up for either the Masters or the PGA. I think it's time for Tiger to come clean to explain why he's not playing even 1 week before a major. Now, if he can't do it physically, he should tell us. And after what happened this weekend with Tiger pulling out after 54 holes after shooting 79, thank you, golfing gods, his future is very much up in the air in the competitive world.
Gary, I think the successes that he has had over the course of his career, and considering his injuries, to play the majors, I don't have too much of a problem with that. But I agree with you. If you've had such a long layoff, I would think that someone of his caliber would know and understand he's got to get some competitive matches in just to sort of relight the fire and gather that focus back that you need. to participate and compete in game situations where, okay, you know, you're chasing a score, but you've got to, you know, work on hitting those key shots so you're not hitting 79s and you're not dropping out, because now everybody's questioning, well, like you said, what's the injury? What's the status? What's the explanation? Reading one quick article, they said, you know, the weather got cold and chilly, and yeah, I'm sure that doesn't help him playing. I know I ache in pain when it gets colder. But you're right. You know, tell the fans what's going on. I'm only choosing these because of this reason. You know, give the golfing fans, not the public in general, but the golfing fans who support you and the game of golf, you know, some enlightenment as to what's going on.
Well, I think he learned. I think from this past weekend, he's going to have to either change his approach or come clean with everyone who's rooting for him in this world. Most everybody except me. But that's up to him. I think he learned his lesson, though. Now, this is the second tournament he's played in. And he's going to have to maybe make a hard and fast decision that he either can't do it physically, or he'll give it a shot at Brookline. Maybe he'll skip Brookline. I won't be surprised to him if he skips Brookline, the U.S. Open. He's already made a very big deal about wanting to play the Open Championship over at St. Andrews. I think he's won once or twice at St. Andrews, so he's not going to sacrifice St. Andrews under any circumstance whatsoever.
I wonder if he's doing it, Gary, for something to do with financial endorsements or something or other. You know, just play this tournament, that tournament. I don't know, because at this point, it's kind of freaky. It really is, because athletes just don't do that kind of thing that he's doing.
Well, he's also 46 years of age, and he's showing his age as well.
Yeah.
So that was the age when Nicklaus won his 18th and final major. But I think Tiger still has an enormous ego, and I've said before, he thinks he can do something that no other professional golfer of his ilk has done, and that is win a major championship without even really having a reasonable level of preparation for it. So we'll have to see what happens between now and Brookline.
Mm-hmm.
That's the week of June 11th, 12th. The tournament's the 13th, the 16th through the 19th. And let's see what happens between now and then. He may have to hang it up for the year. He may have to retire competitively after what happened this past weekend. We'll eventually find out, but I don't know how long it's going to take before we do find out.
All right, Gary, what's going on locally?
Not much right now, but we do have some stuff going on this week. But nothing at the moment. It's quiet competitively.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that my weekly column appeared in the paper today, and as I probably tweaked it last week, we wrote about Kirk Hannafeld, who turns 66 tomorrow, who won his 10th New England PGA Pro tournament, his 5th match play championship. He's also won 5 on the stroke play side with a partner. And this is just Old Man River, the Tom Brady of the New England PGA Tour. At 66, still showing the young guys how to play the game.
Love it. And what's this thing, Gary, you have about a local running the country club's public relations efforts for the Open?
Yes, Conover, Tuttle, and Pace, based in Boston, used to be based in Linfield, with one of the principals being Chip Tuttle, of Salem born and bred and still living in Salem. Chip Tuttle is one of the two key people from this firm who are providing all public relations support on a professional expertise level for the country club. And we're pretty much focusing on the local stuff, dealing with the local media, dealing with the town of Brookline, and you'll be reading about that next week.
Awesome, awesome. Tim, any final thoughts for Gary? Well, I think we lost him. Maybe that's what the
he's always lost.
No, that's me. Yeah, that was the problem with the phone. All right, he was trying to call in, and I didn't know what that was. Hey, Gary, we're going to take next Monday off because it's Memorial Day, and I'm going to wish you a very, very great, peaceful, wonderful beginning of summer, and reflective, if that's the case, Memorial Day weekend, and be safe.
You as well, and Tim as well, wherever you are out there in the stratosphere, Tim.
All right. I'll give him a call back. Thanks, Gary. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That's Gary Larrabee. I'm going to call Tim here right now because we're going to wrap this up. We've got one more interview coming up, and that is we recorded that earlier. It's going to be with Mike Grenier. He's on his way to the Celtics game tonight, and we'll run that right after we say goodbye to Tim, after we say hello once again to Tim. I don't know what happened, but he did just drop off. Yeah, what happened? You dropped off.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. I heard you say hello. Was someone calling you at the time?
No.
Well, that's weird. All right. Well, anyway, Gary said have a nice week. We're off next week. So he wished you a very good holiday. And I think, Tim, given all that's going on in the world, it's good to reflect for 1 second on Memorial Day, and I think it's coming at the right time. So I hope people do their reflection and their due diligence with respecting those who have given everything, in the line of duty. But also, I do think, my dad was, as I've said many times, an Iwo Jima survivor and several tours in Vietnam, a career military man. And he always enjoyed kicking off summer with the Memorial Day weekend, also saluting, of course, all the people that he knows who were lost. So I'm wishing you the same. I mean, it's hopefully things will turn around in this country and in the world.
Yeah, certainly. And I think it's also important to remember beyond the veterans that made the ultimate sacrifice, but those veterans that are still with us, that wear their uniforms proudly on days such as Memorial Day, and in many ways have also made the ultimate sacrifice, and that they live with the memories of what they experienced, and some are able to deal with it better than others, and for those that have been traumatized by it, who suffer with PTSD, we need to make sure that we extend to them the greatest amount of help and sympathy and understanding that we possibly can, because again, they made a voluntary choice to serve the nation, and we must remember that, we must honor that, we must never forget it.
Well spoken, and I hope that elected representatives hear what you say, Tim, and if not, then they get voted out and new people get voted in, and I appreciate your thoughts, Tim. We're going to wrap it up here because I'm going to play the recording with Mike Grenier next, so I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, Rick. Enjoy the week.
Absolutely. You too, Coach. Thank you so much.
Okay, buddy.
All right, take care. All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is our Ambassador of Goodwill and, of course, our Super Analyst here on MSO News Sports. All right, that's a busy hour. I'm going to leave it here, say goodnight, and we're going to run this interview with Mike Grenier coming up next, and go Celtics. Thank you for being with us. Want to get a hold of us, please email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, or you could also leave a message, a voice message, on our coach's hotline, 978-325-3638, 978-325-3638. Thank you very much, and here's Mike. Okay, time now to talk some Celtics and other stuff with sports journalist Mike Grenier. And Mike, welcome back. How are you today?
Yeah, well, Rick, doing well. Although it's getting late on Monday afternoon, the Celtics are in not really a great position right now after losing at home on Saturday night and falling behind 2-1 in this series when a lot of people thought they'd take a 2-1 lead. So it's been a reverse of fortune for the Celtics.
All right, we talked the other day, and before we get into tonight's game, let's talk a little bit about logistics and other things as well, because you and I were talking in our warm-up here about getting credentials to the game. I know that Nick Giannino covers the Celtics for the Salem News, and you are still strongly associated with the Salem News, but
right.
Trying to get credentials for this game, a little bit of a problem?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I've been going since 1973, and I've never been turned down for a credential, so sadly, when I didn't receive any notification from the Celtics, okay, this is puzzling, and come to find out from Nick Giannino, who is sidelined with COVID, it's still I got to say this, he's definitely improving, and hopefully we'll be back in the saddle in a couple of days when he tests negative, hopefully, but the Celtics' own PR director, who handles credentials, is down with COVID and still stuck in Miami, even though the game is at the Boston Garden tonight. I feel bad for the kid, Brandon Chin, because he is obviously can't fly until he tests negative. And here it's so ironic that here he is in charge of credentials for the Celtics media, and he's still stuck in Miami. So that shows you how unpredictable and how crazy the whole COVID situation still is in late May of 2022.
And the rules are just so confusing to me. They seem to be changing all the time, and it depends on what organization is doling them out, I guess.
Right, exactly, Rick. And it's just a terrible situation. I know Nick Giannino, the Seattle News, feels badly about not being able to go to the game tonight, but Matt Williams, very capable, and you know him very well, will be covering the game, I believe, just as Phil Stacey did a game last week, the sports editor of the Seattle News. So it'll be well covered, and I'll be hanging around and providing old man wisdom, I guess.
Well, it's funny. I have so much respect for all of you guys. I met today the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete of the Year Award is going to be announced in a week or so.
Yes.
And I met with Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times and Kyle Gaudette of the Newburyport Daily News and Paul Halloran of Grant Communications and, of course, the estimable Phil Stacey of the Salem News. And it's just amazing to sit at that round table and listen to everyone. Of course, Kyle is a young guy, and I give him total respect, Mike. He just listens, and he takes it all in.
That's great, because those other guys you mentioned, I know them all very well. How many years of experience right there with those other guys?
Oh, yeah.
Phil and Paul Halloran, who used to work at the Lynn Item and all that. So just unbelievable. Nick Kukru, of course, lots of experience there, and they know their North Shore sports inside and out. And then they can branch out and do the college stuff or the national stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great about the local coverage here. I feel blessed just reading these guys when I'm not actively involved, just reading local journalists and all that and listening to guys on the radio, because there's so much knowledge, institutional knowledge, throughout the North Shore. It's awesome.
Well, in just covering, and, you know, the whole plan is to get together was for the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete thing. But the sidebars, the conversations between now Paul and Phil in particular, as they roam the spectrum, from Frank DeFelice to Bob DeFelice to the current coach of Pawtucket, girls tennis. It's remarkable. One more thing I want to mention before we get back to the Celts, Mike, if you don't mind. I heard today we were talking about another an absolute sports icon in the area of our generation. Mike Lynch had a pretty bad stroke recently.
Yeah.
But I understand he's on the way to full recovery, and we all wish him well. And I know that you know him probably as well as anybody. We all know him as sports figures on the North Shore.
Oh, just Mike is just a tremendous guy. And I go back to the days when he was kicking field goals for Swampscott High School. And obviously went on to Harvard and then became so many years, the lead sportscaster on Channel 5 Boston. And just out for a walk the other night, 68 years old, and Mike has never been one to not be in great shape physically.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes to show you a person can have a stroke almost no matter what kind of condition he's in. I think Mike had been dealing with high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
but fortunately his wife happened to take the walk with him and happened to go outside when Mike was having the stroke, so he got immediate medical attention. But I'll definitely be reaching out to Mike Lynch. I believe he's going to Spalding Rehab to recover, and obviously the projection is that he will make a full recovery, and that's great news, Rick, as you know, for people who know Mike like you and me and all the other people that we've just mentioned. Such a great and respected TV journalist who cared deeply about not only Swampscott High, but North Shore high schools in general. I can't tell you how many times I would see Mike at a state tournament event, even though he might not have had to be there, but he was still there, even if he wasn't on the clock for Channel 5, because his love of North Shore sports knew no boundaries, you know?
And we forget, too, he was a basketball official for a while, too.
Oh, sure, he sure was, yeah. And that's why I say he's kept himself in great shape. So
yep.
I know that Gary Larrabee and myself will probably be reaching out to Mike to see how he's feeling and coming along.
Well, I don't have personal connections with him, so please express our best wishes from MSO Sports.
Tremendous person.
Absolutely.
His father, Dick, was a long time.
Oh, he was great.
Yep. Stan Pondalevichin became, you know, my first association was with Dick Lynch was when he became the athletic director at Danvers High and passed away. So I went to his wake. It was like the line to get in was a mile and a half long in Swampscott several years ago. It was just amazing how much he deep respect people had for him throughout the North Shore and extending beyond the North Shore.
Well, Bill Newell and I met him many, many years ago when Bill first came to WESX in Salem. And that was his position, by the way, the sports director's job at WESX, that Mike interviewed with one day, and I was working there, and Mike and I went out in the parking lot. And I didn't know him, that he was the Mike Lynch, you know, from Harvard. And he asked me, he said, what do you think, Rick? And I said, well, I'm giving him advice now. Are you ready for this? So I said, Mike, if you take the job, you're going to broadcast a lot of games, get a lot of experience, and then you can probably end up in Boston. Well, about 6 weeks later, he's on Channel 5. So,
sure.
You know, just we wish him well. And I know him and his family, they're just so great in the area. And he does.
No question. He's an asset to North Shore.
Absolutely.
To this day.
Well, all right, now, Mike, as we get into tonight's, you know, we talked about the Celtics. We know that they had a really flat game, their first home game in this series against Miami. And maybe a quick thumbnail on your thoughts now, a couple of days later, about that one.
Well, that was, to me, a mind-blowing game. Just unimaginable, the number of mistakes they made. It's funny, some people are saying 24 turnovers. Then I heard last night 23 turnovers. What's the difference? One more turnover. The bottom line is that's 23 possessions or 24 possessions that they gave away. And as a result, Rick, the Miami Heat took 22 more shots than the Celtics did. So you think of how huge an advantage that is for a team, even if a team is not shooting that well. When you have 22 more shots than the opposing team, you're likely going to win the game. And when you have 19 steals, like the Miami Heat did, that means they get out in transition and had fast break opportunities that the Celtics did not get. The Celtics' sloppiness was really beyond imagination for such a big game, and of course we know that by now that obviously Jason Tatum was responsible for six of those, and Jaylen Brown had seven, but at least Jaylen Brown had a phenomenal offensive night scoring 40 and personally got the Celtics back in the game after they were down by as many as 26. They got the lead down to one. But he still committed those seven turnovers, and it's really nerve-wracking when he takes the ball into traffic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's really nerve-wracking. But Tatum was the most mysterious figure in that game because not only did he have the six turnovers, but he was 3-for-14 shooting and only had 10 points. So I get a sense that he's going to want to come out really strong in Game 4 tonight at the Boston Garden because they need to tie this series now because this next game, two of the next three after this, would be in Miami.
Yeah.
So it's essential they don't fall behind 3-1. So expect Jason Tatum to come out strong.
I think the thing, besides Tatum not getting any points in the second half, and you're right, Jaylen Brown is scary freaky when he tries to go into the lane. But the thing that you it was the major, your first point was, and I want to bring up a tennis term, unforced errors.
Yes.
That's mind-boggling.
It is, because there were several sloppy passes. How about the one with 44 seconds left in the game and the Celtics still had an outside chance, and Grant Williams took the ball out of bounds,
yes.
And it was just a soft little pass, and Kyle Lowry, who's 100 years old, by the way, he's been playing in the league out of Villanova, greatly respect, tough, hard-nosed guy, he sneaks in and gets the takeaway, and basically the Miami Heat just wrapped up the game right then and there. So casual. I'm sure Ime Udoka, the Celtics coach, was livid and probably still is livid a few hours before today's game because they made so many, like you said, unforced errors, bad shots, you know, allowing Miami to have 22 more shots than Boston did. I'm sure the coach went through the roof in reacting to that game and watching the film and pointing out the various unforced errors to the guys on film. And they got to come out angry tonight. They have to come out angry and determined. And, you know, it's funny, Jimmy Butler, who didn't even play the second half. That's another factor, Rick.
Right.
Jimmy Butler, who's capable of scoring 35 and 40 and has done so, even in this series, didn't even play the second half the other night. So that's a point that it could be hammered. The Celtics did not take advantage of Jimmy Butler's absence for the entire second half. They did not take advantage of his absence and come up with a win.
If it's the regular season, okay, then you expect a letdown. You expect a lack of focus. But this is the big show, and it looks, I don't know, can we say that that maybe the whole problem was just a lack of focus? Because I read, I think it was in the Globe today or somewhere, that Coach Udoka was saying we weren't ready for the physicality, even though Al Horford and I, he didn't say it like that, but I'm paraphrasing, mentioned the fact that they're going to be physical. So that lack of focus, I guess you can excuse in the regular season. Maybe it's not a lack of focus. Maybe the other team is better, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two. I think the Celtics did not come out with the attitude that, hey, we have to really put the gas on the pedal here the whole time, because Miami is a really defensive-minded team that is physically tough, and they have veterans, Rick. I mean, we're talking Jimmy Butler. We're talking Lowry, who's been around for 15 years. We're talking, Adebayo, who's a good, strong, young player, but has been around a few years. They played him 2 years ago in the bubble, and they lost to the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the Celtics were 2 years young. In other words, what I'm saying is that both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were 2 years younger and maybe weren't quite ready to reach the NBA Finals. Now, they actually have a better all-around team, Boston does, and those two young studs are 2 years older, and this should be their prime time of getting a great opportunity to get to the NBA Finals, where it looks like the Golden State Warriors will be waiting for them up 3-0.
Yeah.
But the Celtics should be more than ready to take this next step. But to do that, they have to defeat a Miami opponent that's not going to give an inch, because not only do they have great players, but Eric Spoelstra has made some adjustments here in Game 3, certainly, that threw the Celtics way off. And the Celtics, just with their lack of focus, like you said, and all the turnovers, which obviously are attributable to the lack of focus, the Celtics have to come out with a mindset that every possession is meaningful. You can't just kick the ball out of bounds, literally or figuratively. You need to do it mentally.
I've learned from high school coaches, Mike, when I talk with them, and I want to reference hockey coach right now, that he tells his kids, you have to go out and win this shift.
Right.
But you have to do it every time.
Right. That means you got to win this possession, offensively and then defensively. And, Rick, I think we need to mention Marcus Smart, because at least here it is 2 or 3 hours before the game, but his status is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did roll his ankle really badly Saturday night. And I know they were saying he was limping at practice subsequently. So we don't know what kind of shape. We know he's got the spunk and the guts. He's going to give it a try and play for as long as he can tonight. If he's declared eligible to play, that is, who knows, it might be out of his hands if the trainers say he can't play. But we know he's going to go all out, but we don't know how affected he is by that bad ankle. And I believe he just got the Mr. Hustle Award from the NBA today with his Defensive Player of the Year Award.
Well, it's funny.
There we go.
The analog to me is again, I'm going to hockey, Patrice Bergeron playing, in the playoffs with a collapsed lung and a broken shoulder, and he wins all these awards. And imagine what he could do if he were healthy. But I think the other one I want to ask, and I hope Marcus Smart can play tonight, because he certainly is huge. What about the other, who was it? Was it
Robert Williams, obviously, too, and up in the air. We never know with him. Obviously, he had that knee surgery, came back sooner than expected. And since then, it's been plays one game, out one game, plays one game. So we're not sure where he's at tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't know maybe till game time, because the two coaches, Spoelstra and Udoka, seem to be sort of playing mind games with each other, and they don't announce their injury report until almost 15 minutes or half an hour before the game. We know that Tyler Hero, who sixth man of the year in the NBA and plays for the Miami Heat, he is definitely out. That's a big plus from the Celtics perspective, because Tyler Hero has not played well in this series. However, he's capable of going off for 25-30 in any given game.
Okay, now I'm going to throw you
the lineup tonight is big for the Celtics.
I'm going to throw you a curveball. I want you to be Spoelstra and tell me what you expect from the Celtics tonight. Not what you're going to do, but what do you think, as the Miami coach, the Celtics are going to do?
Well, I think that if you're Eric Spoelstra, I think you're thinking that the Celtics are going to come out really hard in the first quarter, and if you can weather that storm and be right there at the end of the first quarter, tied or down four or up four or whatever, you're in pretty good shape. Because if you're taking the Celtics' best punch in the first quarter and you're still right there, you figure, okay, my experience with Lowry back and with P.J. Tucker back, again, here's a guy, P.J. Tucker, who maybe wasn't supposed to play on Saturday night. He gives them 11 points and 6 or 8 rebounds, and he defends like crazy. He's 37 years old. P.J. Tucker is a perfect example of a guy who he knows he doesn't have much time left in the NBA. He told his teammates, I don't know how much longer I'm going to go. This is a perfect attitude, in my opinion. He told his teammates Saturday, I don't know how many minutes I can give you, but I can tell you guys, every minute that I'm on the floor, I'm going to be scrambling, diving, fighting defensively, because I know that there aren't many more chances for me to win a championship. And he's just coming off a championship with the Bucks last year. What a phenomenal attitude, okay, to have. And he's 37 years old. The Celtics have Al Horford in that category, and I think he has been the guy that has been as focused as any Miami player, or as any player that the Nets had, or as any player that the Bucks had in the second round. He's been that guy who has been a consistently focused player. And I think after Saturday's game, you could tell that he was perplexed at the Celtics' lack of focus and lack of paying attention and all the turnovers. And he's too nice a guy to criticize his teammates, but you could tell that he was definitely upset and disappointed. So you hope that the young guys, particularly Tatum and Brown, come out and really take care of the ball tonight. That will be the key element of the game.
Well, maybe Al said something up close and personal to those guys. No,
he could have.
Let's go in the other locker room and tell me what Coach Udoka is expecting from Spoelstra.
I think he's going to expect an all-out defensive effort, just like Spoelstra gave him the other night. They come up with loose balls. They had the 19 steals. I think they're in the Celtics' heads about that right now. Spoelstra, if anything, your accomplished Saturday was to be in the Celtics' mindset because they had so many steals. And Spoelstra's thinking, hey, if the Celtics get a little casual with the ball, we're going to take it from you. And I think Spoelstra feels that now that Tucker is back from injury, that Kyle Lowry is back from injury, and that Adebayo was up top of his game, he feels pretty confident that they have the depth to handle any Celtics onslaught. So if I'm Spoelstra, I'm thinking they're going to try to get Jason Tatum off to a great start, and they're going to try to get Jaylen Brown off to a great start without committing those turnovers. So he's going to just play it straight-up defense and play the type of hard-nosed defense that gave the Celtics so much problems, so many problems on Saturday. I think that's just the way he's going to be thinking.
Great analysis, and have fun tonight. That's Mike Grenier, sports journalist, and we're going to talk with Mike on Tuesday. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
Thank you, Rick.